from Monticello, Maine, in the United States of America. It's Free Speech Radio.
WBCQ.
Guns fall into the wrong hands. Daniel Mauser was only 15 years old when he was gunned down at Columbine. He was an amazing kid, straight-A student, a good skier. Like all parents who lose their children, his father, Tom, has borne unimaginable grief. Somehow he has found the strength to honor his son by transforming his grief into action. Earlier this month, he took a leave of absence from his job to fight for tougher gun safety laws. I pray that his courage and wisdom will at long last move this Congress to make common sense gun legislation the very next order of business.
You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. This is the President's State of the Union speech, and when it's over, we'll open the phones.
Thank you, Tom. We must strengthen our gun laws and enforce those already on the books better. Federal gun crime prosecutions are up 16% since I took office, but we must do more. I propose to hire more federal and local gun prosecutors and more ATF agents to crack down on illegal gun traffickers and bad apple dealers. And we must give them the enforcement tools that they need, tools to trace every gun and every bullet used in every gun crime in the United States. I ask you to help us do that. Every state in this country already requires hunters and automobile drivers to have a license. I think they ought to do the same thing for handgun purchases. Now, specifically, I propose a plan to ensure that all new handgun buyers must first have a photo license from their state showing they passed the Brady background check and a gun safety course before they get the gun. I hope you'll help me pass that in this Congress. Listen to this. The accidental gun death rate of children under 15 in the United States is 9 times higher than in the other 25 industrialized countries combined. Now, technologies now exist that could lead to guns that can only be fired by the adults who own them. I ask Congress to fund research into smart gun technology to save these children's lives. I ask responsible leaders in the gun industry to work with us on smart guns and other steps to keep guns out of the wrong hands to keep our children safe. You know, every parent I know worries about the impact of violence in the media on their children. I want to begin by thanking the entertainment industry for accepting my challenge to put voluntary ratings on TV programs and video and internet games. But frankly, the ratings are too numerous, diverse, and confusing to be really useful to parents. So tonight, I ask the industry to accept the First Lady's challenge to develop a single voluntary rating system for all children's entertainment that is easier for parents to understand and enforce. The steps I outline will take us well on our way to make America the safest big country in the world. Now, to keep our historic economic expansion going, the subject of a lot of discussion in this community and others, I believe we need a 21st century revolution to open new markets, start new businesses, hire new workers right here in America, in our inner city, poor rural areas, and Native American reservations.
You're listening to The Hour of the Time.
Our
I'm William Cooper.
Our prosperity hasn't yet reached these places. Over the last 6 months, I've traveled to a lot of them, joined by many of you and many far-sighted business people, to shine a spotlight on the enormous potential in communities from Appalachia to the Mississippi Delta, from Watts to the Pine Ridge Reservation. Everywhere I go, I meet talented people eager for opportunity and able to work. Tonight, I ask you, let's put them to work. For business, it's a smart thing to do. For America, it's the right thing to do. And let me ask you something. If we don't do this now, when in the wide world will we ever get around to it? So, I ask Congress to give businesses the same incentives to invest in America's new markets they now have to invest in markets overseas. Tonight, I propose a large new markets tax credit and other incentives to spur $22 billion in private sector capital to create new businesses and new investments in our inner cities and rural areas. Because empowerment zones have been creating these opportunities for 5 years now, I also ask you to increase incentives to invest in them and to create more of them. And let me say to all of you again what I have tried to say at every turn. This is not a Democratic or a Republican issue. Giving people a chance to live their dreams is an American issue.
This is The Hour of the Time. You're listening to the President's State of the Union message.
Mr. Speaker, it was a powerful moment last November when you joined Reverend Jesse Jackson and me in your home state of Illinois and committed to working toward our common goal by combining the best ideas from both sides of the aisle. I want to thank you again and to tell you, Mr. Speaker, I look forward to working with you. This is a worthy joint endeavor. Thank you.
That's the speaker that recently called for a global world, your Republican true agenda.
You to make special efforts to address the areas of our nation with the highest rates of poverty, our Native American reservations and the Mississippi Delta. My budget includes a $110 million initiative to promote economic development in the Delta and $1 billion to increase economic opportunity, health care, education, and law enforcement for our Native American communities. Now, in this new century, we should begin this new century by honoring our historic responsibility to empower the first Americans. And I want to thank tonight the leaders and the members from both parties who have expressed to me an interest in working with us on these efforts. They are profoundly important. There's another part of our American community in trouble tonight, our family farmers. When I signed the Farm Bill in 1996, I said there was great danger. It would work well in good times, but not in bad. Well, droughts, floods, and historically low prices have made these times very bad for the farmers. We must work together to strengthen the farm safety net, invest in land conservation, and create some new markets for them by expanding our programs for bio-based fuels and products. Please, they need help. Let's do it together. Opportunity for all requires something else today, having access to a computer and knowing how to use it. That means we must close the digital divide between those who've got the tools and those who don't. Now, connecting classrooms and libraries to the internet is crucial, but it's just a start. My budget ensures that all new teachers are trained to teach 21st century skills, and it creates technology centers in 1,000 communities to serve adults. This spring, I'll invite high-tech leaders to join me on another new markets tour to close the digital divide and open opportunity for our people. I want to thank the high-tech companies that already are doing so much in this area. I hope the new tax incentives I have proposed will get all the rest of them to join us. This is a national crusade. We have got to do this and do it quickly. Now, again, I say to you, these are steps, but step by step, we can go a long way toward our goal of bringing opportunity to every community. To realize the full possibilities of this economy, we must reach beyond our own borders to shape the revolution that is tearing down barriers and building new networks among nations and individuals and economies and cultures. Globalization. It's the central reality of our time. Of course, change this profound is both liberating and threatening to people. But there's no turning back. And our open, creative society stands to benefit more than any other if we understand and act on the realities of interdependence. We have to be at the center of every vital global network as a good neighbor and a good partner. We have to recognize that we cannot build our future without helping others to build theirs. The first thing we have got to do is to forge a new consensus on trade. Now, those of us who believe passionately in the power of open trade, we have to ensure that it lifts both our living standards and our values, never tolerating abusive child labor or a race to the bottom in the environment and worker protection. But others must recognize that open markets and rule-based trade are the best engines we know of for raising living standards, reducing global poverty and environmental destruction, and assuring the free flow of ideas. I believe as strongly tonight as I did the first day I got here, the only direction forward for America on trade, the only direction for America on trade is to keep going forward. I ask you to help me forge that consensus. We have to make developing economies our partners in prosperity. That's why I would like to ask you again to finalize our groundbreaking African and Caribbean Basin trade initiatives. But globalization is about more than economics. Our purpose must be to bring together the world around freedom and democracy and peace, and to oppose those who would tear it apart. Here are the fundamental challenges I believe America must meet to shape the 21st century world. First, we must continue to encourage our former adversaries, Russia and China, to emerge as stable, prosperous, democratic nations. Both are being held back today from reaching their full potential. Russia by the legacy of communism, an economy in turmoil, a cruel and self-defeating war in Chechnya. China by the illusion that it can buy stability at the expense of freedom. But think how much has changed in the past decade. 5,000 former Soviet nuclear weapons taken out of commission. Russian soldiers actually serving with ours in the Balkans. Russian people electing their leaders for the first time in 1,000 years. And in China, an economy more open to the world than ever before. Of course, no one, not a single person in this chamber tonight, can know for sure what direction these great nations will take. But we do know for sure that we can choose what we do. And we should do everything in our power to increase the chance that they will choose wisely to be constructive members of our global community. That's why we should support those Russians who are struggling for a democratic, prosperous future. Continue to reduce both our nuclear arsenals and help Russia to safeguard weapons and materials that remain. And that's why I believe Congress should support the agreement we negotiated to bring China into the WTO by passing permanent, normal trade relations with China as soon as possible this year. I think you ought to do it for two reasons. First of all, our markets are already open to China. This agreement will open China's markets to us. And second, it will plainly advance the cause of peace in Asia and promote the cause of change in China. No, we don't know where it's going. All we can do is decide what we're going to do. But when all is said and done, we need to know we did everything we possibly could to maximize the chance that China will choose the right future. A second challenge we've got is to protect our own security from conflicts that pose the risk of wider war and threaten our common humanity. We can't prevent every conflict or stop every outrage, but where our interests are at stake and we can make a difference, we should be and we must be peacemakers. We should be proud of our role in bringing the Middle East closer to a lasting peace, building peace in Northern Ireland, working for peace in East Timor and Africa, promoting reconciliation between Greece and Turkey and in Cyprus, working to diffuse these crises between India and Pakistan, in defending human rights and religious freedom. And we should be proud of the men and women of our armed forces and those of our allies who stopped the ethnic cleansing in Kosovo, enabling 1 million people to return to their homes.
This is the Hour of the Time, and we're listening to the President's State of the Union message.
When Slobodan Milosevic unleashed his terror on Kosovo, Captain John Cherry was one of the brave airmen who turned the tide. And when another American plane was shot down over Serbia, he flew into the teeth of enemy air defenses to bring his fellow pilot home. Thanks to our armed forces' skill and bravery, we prevailed in Kosovo without losing a single American in combat. Captain Cherry to you. We honor Captain Cherry, and we promise you, Captain, we'll finish the job you began. Stand up so we can see you.
A sellout military officer. Can you believe it? Military is not supposed to participate in politics. In fact, it's against the Uniform Code of Military Justice. This man should be court-martialed.
A third challenge we have is to keep this inexorable march of technology from giving terrorists and potentially hostile nations the means to undermine our defenses. Keep in mind the same technological advances that have shrunk cell phones to fit in the palms of our hands can also make weapons of terror easier to conceal and easier to use. We must meet this threat by making effective agreements to restrain nuclear and missile programs in North Korea, curbing the flow of lethal technology to Iran, preventing Iraq from threatening its neighbors, increasing our preparedness against chemical and biological attack, protecting our vital computer systems from hackers and criminals, and developing a system to defend against new missile threats while working to preserve our ABM missile treaty with Russia. We must do all these things. I predict to you, when most of us are long gone, but sometime in the next 10 to 20 years, the major security threat this country will face will come from the enemies of the nation state, the narco traffickers and the terrorists and the organized criminals who will be organized together, working together with increasing access to ever more sophisticated chemical and biological weapons. And I want to thank the Pentagon and others for doing what they're doing right now to try to help protect us and plan for that so that our defenses will be strong. I ask for your support so they can succeed. I also want to ask you for a constructive, bipartisan dialogue this year to work to build a consensus which I hope will eventually lead to the ratification of the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. I hope we can also have a constructive effort to meet the challenge that is presented to our planet by the huge gulf between rich and poor. We cannot accept a world in which part of humanity lives on the cutting edge of a new economy and the rest live on the bare edge of survival. I think we have to do our part to change that with expanded trade, expanded aid, and the expansion of freedom. This is interesting. From Nigeria to Indonesia, more people got the right to choose their leaders in 1999 than in 1989 when the Berlin Wall fell. We got to stand by these democracies, including and especially tonight, Colombia, which is fighting narco traffickers for its own people's lives and for our children's lives. I have proposed a strong two-year package to help Colombia win this fight. I want to thank the leaders in both parties in both houses for listening to me and the president of Colombia about it. We have got to pass this. I want to ask your help. A lot is riding on it. And it's so important for the long-term stability of our country and for what happens in Latin America. I also want you to know I'm going to send you new legislation to go after what these drug barons value the most. Their money, and I hope you'll pass that as well.
Translation, our money.
In a world where over a billion people live on less than a dollar a day, we also have got to do our part in the global endeavor to reduce the debts of the poorest countries, so they can invest in education, health care, and economic growth. That's what the Pope and other religious leaders have urged us to do. And last year, Congress made a down payment on America's share. I ask you to continue that. I thank you for what you did and ask you to stay the course. I also want to say that America must help more nations to break the bonds of disease. Last year in Africa, 10 times as many people died from AIDS as were killed in wars. 10 times. The budget I give you invests $150 million more in the fight against this and other infectious killers. And today I propose a tax credit to speed the development of vaccines for diseases like malaria, TB, and AIDS. I ask the private sector and our partners around the world to join us in embracing this cause. We can save millions of lives together, and we ought to do it.
You've just confirmed my prediction that the continent of Africa would be hit the hardest by AIDS. It's designed to destroy the Negro race.
I also want to mention our final challenge, which, as always, is the most important. I ask you to pass a national security budget that keeps our military the best trained and best equipped in the world with heightened readiness and 21st century weapons, which raises salaries for our servicemen and women, which protects our veterans, which fully funds the diplomacy that keeps our soldiers out of war, which makes good on our commitment to our UN dues and arrears. I ask you to pass this budget. I also want to say something, if I might, very personal tonight. The American people watching us at home, with the help of all the commentators, can tell from who stands and who sits and who claps and who doesn't that there are still modest differences of opinion in this room. But I want to thank you for something, every one of you. I want to thank you for the extraordinary support you have given, Republicans and Democrats alike, to our men and women in uniform. I thank you for that.
You can't see what happened to me, folks, but the reason he did that is no military officer, no general, no member of the armed forces has applauded anything that he has said, and they have never stood, not once. That is, until now.
I also want to thank especially two people. First, I want to thank our Secretary of Defense, Bill Cohen, for symbolizing our bipartisan commitment to national security. Thank you, sir. Even more, I want to thank his wife, Janet, who more than any other American citizen has tirelessly traveled this world to show the support we all feel for our troops. Thank you, Janet Cohen. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. These are the challenges we have to meet so that we can lead the world toward peace and freedom in an era of globalization. I want to tell you that I am very grateful for many things as president. But one of the things I'm grateful for is the opportunity that the Vice President and I have had to finally put to rest the bogus idea that you cannot grow the economy and protect the environment at the same time. Now, as our economy has grown, we've rid more than 500 neighborhoods of toxic waste, ensured cleaner air and water for millions of people. In the past 3 months alone, we've helped preserve 40 million acres of roadless lands in the national forests, created 3 new national monuments. But as our communities grow, our commitment to conservation must continue to grow. Tonight, I propose creating a permanent conservation fund to restore wildlife, protect coastlines, save natural treasures. From the California Redwoods to the Florida Everglades. This land's legacy endowment would represent by far the most enduring investment in land preservation ever proposed in this House. I hope we can get together with all the people with different ideas and do this. This is a gift we should give to our children and our grandchildren for all time across party lines. We can make an agreement to do this. Last year, the Vice President launched a new effort to make communities more liberal, livable. Liberal? No. No. Wait a minute. I got a punchline now.
Little Freudian slip. That's
this year's agenda. Last year was livable, right? That's what Senator Lott's going to say in the commentary afterwards. To make our communities more livable. This is big business. This is a big issue. What does that mean? You ask anybody to live in an unlivable community, and they'll tell you. They want their kids to grow up next to parks, not parking lots. The parents don't want to have to spend all their time stalled in traffic when they could be home with their children. Tonight, I ask you to support new funding for the following things to make American communities more livable. One.
Freud is alive and well, and you're hearing his entire... this is incredible.
One. I want you to help us to do three things. We need more funding for advanced transit systems. We need more funding for saving...
The president is clearly embarrassed. His face is glowing beet red.
And we need more funding... This ought to have bipartisan appeal. We need more funding for helping major cities around the Great Lakes protect their waterways and enhance their quality of life. We need these things. And I want you to help us. The greatest environmental challenge of the new century is global warming. The scientists tell us the 1990s were the hottest decade of the entire millennium. If we fail to reduce the emission of greenhouse gases, deadly heat waves and droughts will become more frequent, coastal areas will flood, and economies will be disrupted. That is going to happen unless we act. Many people in the United States, some people in this chamber, and lots of folks around the world still believe you cannot cut greenhouse gas emissions without slowing economic growth. In the industrial age, that may well have been true. But in this digital economy, it is not true anymore. New technologies make it possible to cut harmful emissions and provide even more growth. For example, just last week, automakers unveiled cars that get 70 to 80 miles a gallon, the fruits of a unique research partnership between government and industry. And before you know it, efficient production of biofuels will give us the equivalent of hundreds of miles from a gallon of gasoline. To speed innovation in these kinds of technologies, I think we should give a major tax incentive to business for the production of clean energy and to families for buying energy-saving homes and appliances and the next generation of super-efficient cars when they hit the showroom floor. I also ask the auto industry to use the available technologies to make all new cars more fuel-efficient right away. And I ask this Congress to do something else. Please help us make more of our clean energy technology available to the developing world. That will create cleaner growth abroad and a lot more new jobs here in the United States of America.
You're listening to The Hour of the Time, and this is the President's address on the State of the Union.
In this new century, innovations in science and technology will be key not only to the health of the environment, but to miraculous improvements in the quality of our lives and advances in the economy. Later this year, researchers will complete the first draft of the entire human genome, the very blueprint of life. It is important for all our fellow Americans to recognize that federal tax dollars have funded much of this research, and that this and otherwise investments in science are leading to a revolution in our ability to detect, treat, and prevent disease. For example, researchers have identified genes that cause Parkinson's, diabetes, and certain kinds of cancer. They are designing precision therapies that will block the harmful effect of these genes for good. Researchers already are using this new technique to target and destroy cells that cause breast cancer. Soon we may be able to use it to prevent the onset of Alzheimer's. Scientists are also working on an artificial retina to help many blind people to see. And listen to this, microchips that would actually directly stimulate damaged spinal cords in a way that could allow people now paralyzed to stand up and walk. Kinds of innovations are also propelling our remarkable prosperity. Information technology only includes 8% of our employment, but now accounts for a third of our economic growth, along with jobs that pay, by the way, about 80% above the private sector average. Again, we ought to keep in mind government-funded research brought supercomputers, the internet, and communication satellites into being. Soon, researchers will bring us devices that can translate foreign languages as fast as you can talk. Materials 10 times stronger than steel at a fraction of the weight. And this is unbelievable to me. Molecular computers the size of a teardrop with the power of today's fastest supercomputers. To accelerate the march of discovery across all these disciplines in science and technology, I ask you to support my recommendation of an unprecedented $3 billion in the 21st Century Research Fund, the largest increase in civilian research in a generation. We owe it to our future. These new breakthroughs have to be used in ways that reflect our values. First and foremost, we have to safeguard our citizens' privacy. Last year, we proposed to protect every citizen's medical record. This year, we will finalize those rules. We've also taken the first steps to protect the privacy of bank and credit card records and other financial statements. Soon, I will send legislation to you to finish that job. We must also act to prevent any genetic discrimination whatever by employers or insurers. I hope you will support that. These steps will allow us to lead toward the far frontiers of science and technology. They will enhance our health, the environment, the economy, in ways we can't even imagine today. But we all know that at a time when science, technology, and the forces of globalization are bringing so many changes into all our lives, it's more important than ever that we strengthen the bonds that root us in our local communities and in our national community. No tie binds different people together like citizen service. There's a new spirit of service in America, a movement we've tried to support with AmeriCorps, expanded Peace Corps, unprecedented new partnerships with businesses, foundations, community groups. Partnerships, for example, like the one that enlisted 12,000 companies, which have now moved 650,000 of our fellow citizens from welfare to work. Partnerships to battle drug abuse, AIDS, teach young people to read, save America's treasures, strengthen the arts, fight teen pregnancy, prevent violence among young people, promote racial healing. The American people are working together. But we should do more to help Americans help each other. First, we should help faith-based organizations to do more to fight poverty and drug abuse and help people get back on the right track with initiatives like Second Chance Homes that do so much to help unwed teen mothers. Second, we should support Americans who tithe and contribute to charities but don't earn enough to claim a tax deduction for it. Tonight, I propose new tax incentives that would allow low and middle income citizens who don't itemize to get that deduction. It's nothing but fair, and it'll get more people to give. We should do more. Thank you, sir. We should do more to help new immigrants to fully participate in our community. That's why I recommend spending more to teach them civics and English. And since everybody in our community counts, we've got to make sure everyone is counted in this year's census. Now, within 10 years, just 10 years, there will be no majority race in our largest state of California. In a little more than 50 years, there'll be no majority race in America. In a more interconnected world, this diversity can be our greatest strength. Just look around this chamber. Look around. We have members in this Congress from virtually every racial, ethnic, and religious background. And I think you would agree that America is stronger because of it. You also have to agree that all those differences you just clapped for all too often spark hatred and division, even here at home. Just in the last couple of years, we've seen a man dragged to death in Texas just because he was black. We saw a young man murdered in Wyoming just because he was gay. Last year, we saw the shootings of African Americans, Asian Americans, and Jewish children, just because of who they were. This is not the American way, and we must draw the line.
Folks, that's the worst example of race baiting that I've ever seen in my entire life. The worst example of race baiting I have ever seen in my entire life.
I ask you to draw that line by passing without delay the Hate Crimes Prevention Act and the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
I repeat, what this man just said is the worst example of race baiting I have ever seen in my entire life, and I am anti-racism.
And I ask you to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act. Tonight, I propose the largest ever investment in our civil rights laws for enforcement, because no American should be subjected to discrimination in finding a home, getting a job, going to school, or securing a loan. Protections in law should be protections in fact. Last February, because I thought this was so important, I created the White House Office of One America to promote racial reconciliation. That's what one of my personal heroes, Hank Aaron, has done all his life. From his days as our all-time home run king to his recent acts of healing, he has always brought people together. We should follow his example, and we're honored to have him with us tonight. Stand up, Hank Aaron. I want to say one more thing about this, and I want every one of you to think about this next time you get mad at one of your colleagues on the other side of the aisle. This fall at the White House, Hillary had one of her millennium dinners, and we had this very distinguished scientist there who was an expert in this whole work in the human genome. And he said that we are all, regardless of race, genetically 99.9% the same. Now, you may find that uncomfortable when you look around here. But it is worth remembering. We can laugh about this, but you think about it. Modern science has confirmed what ancient faiths have always taught. The most important fact of life is our common humanity. Therefore, we should do more than just tolerate our diversity. We should honor it and celebrate it.
This has been one of the most blatant, racist portions of any speech that I've ever heard in my entire life, folks. I deplore racism. I believe it's a plague upon the human race.
My fellow Americans, every time I prepare for the State of the Union, I approach it with hope and expectation and excitement for our nation. But tonight is very special because we stand on the mountaintop of a new millennium. Behind us, we can look back and see the great expanse of American achievement. And before us, we can see even greater, grander frontiers of possibility. We should all of us be filled with gratitude and humility for our present progress and prosperity. We should be filled with awe and joy at what lies over the horizon. And we should be filled with absolute determination to make the most of it. You know, when the framers finished crafting our Constitution in Philadelphia, Benjamin Franklin stood in Independence Hall and he reflected on the carving of the sun. It was on the back of a chair he saw. The sun was low on the horizon. So he said this. He said, "I've often wondered whether that sun was rising or setting. Today," Franklin said, "I have the happiness to know it's a rising sun. Today, because each succeeding generation of Americans has kept the fire of freedom burning brightly, lighting those frontiers of possibility, we all still bask in the glow and the warmth of Mr. Franklin's rising sun." After 224 years, the American Revolution continues. We remain a new nation. And as long as our dreams outweigh our memories, America will be forever young. That is our destiny. And this is our moment. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America.
Folks, that's it, and you are listening to the Hour of the Time. Something is definitely not right here. There we go. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. You just heard the President's State of the Union address, or at least the last, I don't know how many minutes. It was well over an hour and a half, probably over an hour and 45 minutes. And we were running the first portion of the speech here in the Round Valley of Arizona. And I'm hearing some kind of weird noise over the earphones. I can't figure out what in the world it is or where it's coming from. So what I'm going to do is shut some things off here and see if that helps. I don't know if it's going to. Probably isn't. But the phones are open, 520-333-4578. What did you think about what you heard? Good evening, you're on the air.
Bill, this is Jeffrey in New Orleans, and I have never been more insulted in my life when I heard Bill Clinton's remarks on that speech, and I'll tell you why. One, he talked about the government protecting the privacy of banks. He lied. It was the Libertarian Party's website that stopped your Know Your Customer law last year, which would have given the federal government control over information coming from the banks. Now, the government's trying to do it again with another, I think, B2 legislation that's coming out, which could do the same thing as that Know Your Customer law. But that's not the only lie Clinton told. You recall his remark about the 99% combination of similarity of man to chimpanzees.
Yeah.
How dare you, Mr. Clinton, compare me to an animal that kills its own young, destroys its own sex partners and everything else. the difference between man and the chimpanzee is so immense because man thinks in order to survive. And that's what really makes man the species that dominates the earth. For him to come along and tell this blind man that I'm no better than a chimpanzee is a joke.
It was not only a joke, it was a great insult to all of them. Not only that, but he made some extremely racist remarks against the Caucasian race. Tonight,
that's right.
He actually compared the Caucasian race to the source of all of the problems that this country has ever faced, when the Caucasian race was the majority race that built this country.
That's correct.
And I'm not a racist. I am not a white supremacist. I am for all people and all races, as this audience has learned over the years, and I was absolutely appalled at what this man said.
That's correct. And, of course, a lot of the other points that come out of his speech are all tied to the socialist New World Order agenda to destroy our industry in the name of the environment and convert this country into a police state. And as far as I'm concerned, well, when I see him, just to give you one more example, when I see him trying to give that Cuban boy back to a father whom, according to Peter Jennings of ABC News, is a avowed communist and a castrista, a supporter of Fidel Castro.
That's where I got a park company with.
I understand your situation on this.
The father has the legal right, and the father is the legal guardian and father and everything else for that child.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I understand our differences as to why. But anyway, as far as I am concerned, when I hear this kind of stuff going on, it makes me want to, well, I don't want to say anything, but that's why I'm not part of the major party system and why I stay libertarian. I'm going to let other people come on the air, but as far as I'm concerned, this president has alienated himself from me one more time.
Yeah, well, thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Thanks once again for your opinion. 520-333-4578 is the number. What did you think about what you heard, folks? Well, some of the things I heard were just absolutely despicable. Who did he leave out? I mean, if you listen to the whole thing, he promised the world to every single person, every group, everything. It's unbelievable. This is the greatest attempt for socialism to take over this country and subvert the sovereignty of the states and just seize power in every single aspect of society that there is. Good evening. You're on the air.
Was that the devil or was that Bill Clinton? I can't tell the difference.
Well, I can't tell the difference either. If there is a devil, that sure certainly was it. You know, are you there? Oh, boy. Another one of these. Okay. 520-333-4578 is the number. And what did you think? Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. Mr. Cooper.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Rick from Pennsylvania. Did I hear him right when he said he stood up to the American people?
That's what he said.
Freudian slip there, I guess.
Not only him, but the Congress stood up to the American people and went absolutely against our wishes. He admitted it right there.
I wasn't sure if that was on purpose or a slip or...
Oh, absolutely on purpose. And if he gets away with it, it will just confirm that the American people are solidly within the hands of socialism, which I've been telling you all along.
Oh, absolutely.
But most that will go over the head of most people. They won't even understand. Most people don't even understand anything that he said.
My wife was listening to it, and I've been trying to, you know, enlighten her about things. And I said, "Did he say that?" And she said, "Yeah." She was kind of even surprised about it too.
Yeah.
And he must have mentioned the children about 150 times.
What do you think about the oppression of the white race of all of the other people who live in America today? The gay guy that was dragged behind the truck, the blacks that were murdered by whites, all the crimes, you know, he didn't mention the word white race, but that's exactly what he was saying. He did not mention the whites who were killed by blacks because they were white.
Yeah, you never hear
the racist crimes against whites by other races just because some woman was white that was walking down a street and got raped, or was white that was murdered. You know, these things happen all the time. I mean, this was absolutely despicable for him to exclude the white race from his little tirade about how people were being discriminated against and crimes were being committed against them.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And bringing up Columbine, and
it was an absolute bow down and kowtow to the race card. That's the most despicable thing I've ever heard. And I can, you know what? We're gonna. I've recorded all of this. We're gonna go through every single bit of it. And we're going to analyze it piece by piece over the next few weeks, and we're going to just tear this despicable asshole to pieces, because that's exactly what he is.
Oh, I know.
I have never heard such a lying, putrid, festering sore that has ever appeared amongst the American people like this piece of crap.
I try not to hate people, but I'm telling you.
Oh, I'm telling you, it's getting easier and easier, isn't it?
Oh.
He just promised everything in the world to
everybody.
Single person.
And he's shoving out money like it's like, well, I know they're creating it out of thin air, but.
Oh, this is incredible. This is the most incredible thing I've ever heard in my life. I've never heard anything like this in my life.
Yeah,
even dreamed that anybody had the chutzpah, as my good Jewish friends would say, to stand up and do something like that.
Well, we're seeing it. We're seeing it right here and right
Absolutely
now.
Absolutely incredible.
Yep. He's drawing a line in the sand, all right.
Yep. Well, I got to let you go. We're out of time.
God bless you, sir.
Folks, make sure that you tune in on Monday night, because Monday night we've got a special broadcast about these school shootings. And then on Tuesday we're going to start taking this jerk, this traitor, this liar, this pervert, this sexual criminal, I could go on and on. We're going to take his State of the Union speech apart piece by piece, and every night we're going to devote to a portion of his speech until we've just absolutely analyzed it right down to the nitty-gritty. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Pooh, Annie, and Allison. I love you.
I'm a gonna raise a fuss, I'm a gonna raise a holler about a working old summer just to try to earn a dollar. Baby, try to get a date. My boss says,
no dice, son, you gotta work late.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. Oh, well, my mom and papa told me, son, you gotta make some money. Now, if you wanna use a car to go a ride next Sunday. Well, I didn't go to work, told the boss I was sick.
Now you can't use a car because you didn't work or live.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm going to do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. I'm going to take 2 weeks, don't I ever find vacation. I'm going to take my problem to the United Nations.
Help you, son, but you're too young to vote.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
This is WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, in the USA, your natural station.
This is the planet, here for you, WBCQ.
From Walterboro, South Carolina, in the United States of America, the international broadcast, The Overcomer, with the voice of the Last Day Prophet of God.